Hello friends, today I'm going to take a risk and share a little mathematics. I've mentioned algebraic geometers before, and today's chapter is going to introduce a topologist, but really, Fussily is a placeholder for many of the mathematicians I've encountered over the years. I want to be upfront though, Fussily is an amalgam of many of the mathematicians I've known, not all. If you're an algebraic geometer or a topologist or any other variety of mathematician, please don't feel misrepresented if you don't recognize yourself. Mathematicians, like everyone else, come in many shapes and sizes. That said, I realize that most of you out there are not mathematicians. So, for those whose eyes have glazed over when I've mentioned algebraic geometry in the past, take a deep breath and buckle up, because I'd like to give you a glimpse of the beauty and power of mixing symbolic variables with pictures, which is kind of what algebraic geometry is. Specifically, I'm going to describe for you my own first brush with algebraic geometry. It wasn't until grad school that my eyes were really open to algebraic geometry, but the thing is, that foundational moment could have been experienced much earlier. So, today, I want to take a minute to recall it. It was the introductory lecture, after all. The lecturer was one Brian Conrad, whose self-described reputation for pedantry made him intimidating, and I confess being lost before the end of the course. But this opening salvo lives with me to this day, over a quarter of a century later. So, let's get started. I'm hoping most of you will vaguely recall Pythagoras' theorem, which itself is an interplay between numbers and pictures. As a refresher, it says that the area of a square sitting against the longest side of a right-angle triangle, a triangle with one corner the same as a corner in any square, is the same as the sum of the areas of the two squares against the other two sides, those either side of the right angle that defines the right triangle. I've included a link to a picture in the show notes. If you look at the picture, you'll see a connection between the numbers representing the areas, and the geometry in the picture. And maybe you recall that the triangle with sides 3, 4, and 5 is one such triangle. A quick examination verifies that the algebra at least checks out. That is, 3 times 3 plus 4 times 4 equals 5 times 5. The wonder of Brian's opening lecture was to describe a way of enumerating all such triangles with whole number sides x, y, and z. That is, all whole number solutions to x squared plus y squared equals z squared. To see this, we're going to employ a few nifty tricks, the first of which is a piece of algebra, dividing through by z squared, which yields x over z squared plus y over z squared equals 1. But if we think of x over z as capital X and y over z as capital Y as just two rational numbers, which is fancy math speak for fractions, then really, we're looking for rational, that is, fraction number, solutions to x squared plus y squared equals 1, which some of you might recall is the equation for a circle with radius 1, centered at the origin. That is, we've reduced our task to finding points on the unit circle with rational, aka fraction number, solutions. Now comes the geometry. We're going to draw a line that intersects this circle, and note that finding the intersection points amounts to solving a quadratic equation, since, as you may recall, a line is something of the form y equals mx plus b. So really, we're just replacing the capital Y in the equation for the circle with mx plus b. For those listening along, this is easier to see on the page, but bear with me. Now, the brilliant insight here is that if the m and b are rational numbers, then by the quadratic formula, the x's we're looking for will have the form some rational number plus or minus the square root of some other rational number, which means the only possible non-rational thing going on is the square root. Remember, non-rational just means not a fraction and not crazy. And this means that if we know one of the roots is rational, then we know the other one must be too. This is exactly the kind of high-level thinking that goes into the creative part of mathematics. Notice that we haven't made any calculations yet. Instead, we're just thinking about ideas and implications. Moreover, the idea that solutions of quadratic equations come in related pairs is something very natural to any mathematician. And again, not surprising, since a generic line will intersect a circle in 2 points, or one double point, or no points, which really just means imaginary points. But I'm getting sidetracked. Anyway, we certainly know one point on that circle, namely -1, 0. Though just to be clear, there is nothing special about this point, except that it is rational. We could just as easily have chosen 3/5, 4/5. If you check out the show notes, there's a picture of what I'm talking about. Basically, it's just a circle with a line through it, and the line intersects the circle at the point -1, 0. So the thing is, any other rational point on this circle will define a line between the point we're starting with and -1, 0. And, moreover, a little careful consideration will show that such a line will have rational coefficients m and b. The magic thing is that this correspondence goes both ways. We could also parameterize, which is a fancy way of saying list off, our lines through our starting point, -1, 0, using the slope m alone. The b's will come for free, if you will. The point -1, 0 kind of makes that happen. Thus, every Pythagorean triple is parameterized, or counted, or enumerated, or listed, using our starting point, -1, 0, and our rational slope, m. Amazing, huh? Okay, I grant that if this is the first time you've seen or heard this, your eyes are almost certainly swimming right now. But I also claim that working through the details is really just a matter of dotting I's and crossing T's. The amazing thing is that this simple picture and the algebraic insight about roots coming in pairs have given us an algorithm for listing every Pythagorean triple that exists. With some luck, in your heart of hearts, you now have some hope and expectation as to why this is all true. To be sure, there are details to square away, but you have in your hot hands a mathematical pirate map. Maybe it's been stained by tea and sullied by dirt and grime, and maybe it's even got a burnt hole in the center where someone brought it too close to the flame when trying to make sense of it all. But it's a map, and you could try following it if the whim struck you. All right, thanks for indulging me, and let me know if this was helpful or interesting. I doubt that such excursions will become a regular part of these commentaries, but I wanted to give you some insight. And given that today's chapter gives another glimpse into mathematical thought, it seemed like a fun one to pair this recollection with. Of course, if you all love this, I can always add more of these sorts of elements into the commentary section. Lastly, if you're listening to this and wish you had a picture to see, know that you can always sign up for the weekly newsletter version of this podcast on my website, www.writtenbyrufus.com, or go back and have a look at the text version of any past episode under the Episodes tab. The newsletter version is also an easy thing to forward to friends who might find this podcast interesting. Just remember to remind them that it'll probably make more sense if they start at the beginning. Until next week, be kind to someone and keep an eye out for the ripples of joy you've seeded. Oh, and as an added incentive to check out the website, I put today's episode image into a new AI text-to-video generator and asked it to animate it. The output is pretty cool, especially given how little was required to make it. Anyway, I thought I'd share, and it's up on the website. And now, without further ado, here's chapter 23, in which Mitzer seeks outside expertise to make sense of time travel. Chapter 23. Life on a Rope. After Saskia left, Mitzer texted a man she hadn't spoken with in 6 months. Fussily texted right back. He had to give a lecture that afternoon, but was otherwise free and happy for her to drop by. Mitzer packed her bag for the day, pulled the battery from its charging station, and hopped on her bike. Believing now that Saskia could slip in time, Mitzer wanted to consult an expert on the subject. She didn't know any physicists, but she'd interviewed a mathematician a few months back for a piece she'd written about climate change tipping points. Though his explanations had left her with a distinct feeling that she was swimming in much deeper waters than she'd at first thought, he'd seemed eager to help if ever she had another question that she thought might be down his alley. His department bio described him as a four-dimensional topologist. Mitzel reasoned that time was the fourth dimension. Worst case, he would no doubt be able to direct her to someone more on point. 40 minutes later, and a little more sweaty than she'd have liked, she arrived at UCLA. Still, she hadn't regretted her decision to ride. It was a nightmare to find parking anywhere near campus, unless you were prepared to fork over an arm and a leg to the parking structures and risk a dent from the narrow spaces. Besides, riding her bike was better for her and better for the world, even if it was electric. Vasily laughed when she first mentioned time travel, but moments later, he was talking to her about life being like a curve in four-dimensional space-time. Instead of thinking of us as occupying a point in three-space, add a fourth dimension and follow the path. That point, you or me, cuts out in the new space. The point becomes a curve, and that curve is your lifeline, like a rope in four dimensions. Vasily stopped for a moment to marvel at his construction. But as he beamed at Mitzel, he realized by her deer-in-the-headlights stare that he'd moved too fast. No worries, he waved his hands reassuringly as if to damp down the air in front of him. Let me back up. Sit. Mitzel settled herself on a well-worn couch that rested against one wall in Vasily's office. She was about to place her hand on the armrest, but noticing the cushion's stuffing spilling out of a hole that was generated more by wear than tear, she opted for her lap instead. If you were a point in space, Vasily started a new attack on his explanation, which obviously you're not. I mean, you take up a bunch of space. Excuse you. Vasily laughed nervously. No, I'm not calling you fat or overweight. You're just not an idealized point. Not fat, just not ideal? Mitzel checked, no less affronted. You're wonderful. You're just not a single point in space. You wouldn't want to be a single point in space. So why keep harping on it? Vasily sighed. He was uncomfortable around attractive women, even if the woman in question was one he knew he had no shot with. In any case, his point was more than nomenclature. To explain it, he reduced the dimensions. Say you live on a line. You could think of this as the rope we were talking about earlier. Actually, don't think of this as the rope. Think of the line as a tightrope. You walk backwards and forwards along it, but that's it. Actually, you're an ant. On a pogo stick on the tightrope. And it's important that I'm an ant and that I'm on a pogo stick? Mitzel was mystified as to why Vasily would introduce these details. But Vasily persisted. He had chosen an ant because that was small enough that it was essentially just a point on the tightrope. But then he had realized that an ant had six legs. So actually, it took multiple points on the tightrope. That was why he had put the ant on a pogo stick. And this is how you normally think about the world? Mitzel asked him. It's supposed to help give a sense of what is going on, Vasily stated, without irony. But now that I think about it, a pogo stick would keep bouncing off the tightrope. He paused. Maybe a unicycle is a better model. I'm an ant on a unicycle on an imaginary tightrope. Vasily nodded enthusiastically. And we're really just interested in the point where your wheel touches the tightrope. Mitzel got the sense that this rabbit hole would keep descending if she asked for more clarification. So she too nodded. Vasily then sat beside her and laid a sheet of paper on the coffee table in front of them. A blank sheet, upon which he drew two axes. Indicating the line that crossed the page, he said, "This is how far along the tightrope you are." Mitzel nodded again. If she squinted at it, she could pretend it was the tightrope. Vasily then pointed to the vertical line bisecting the page. "Anywhere on this line means you're at the centre of your tightrope." Mitzel cocked her head, askance. It looked to her that all but one point, the intersection point at the centre, were off the tightrope. "Left to right on the page is where you are on the tightrope," Vasily clarified. "Up down is forward or backward in time." "Got it," Mitzel nodded, understanding his meaning. "Centre of the page equals centre of the tightrope. At the start of time. Higher on the centre line is later in time, but still in the middle of the tightrope. Lower is earlier. So far, so good." "Great," Vasily clapped his hands. "Now, here's your life curve." And with that, he drew the following delightfully flowing curve on his axes. For those listening along, I've put a link in the episode's page to the graph that Vasily has drawn. Vasily then placed his finger on the left end of the curve. Our ant starts on the left end of the tightrope, and if you, the ant, look out at that point in time, you'll see yourself at two other points along the tightrope, all at the same moment in time. He indicated quickly the other two places that his curve crossed the horizontal axis. You are simultaneously at three points on the tightrope at the beginning of time. Now, as time creeps forward, you pogo smoothly along the tightrope. I'm not sure if smoothly pogoing is a thing, Mitzer objected. And didn't we switch to a unicycle anyway? Vasily paused. Right, imagine your pogo stick has a little wheel on the bottom. A really little wheel. That's your unicycle. The point where that wheel touches the tightrope is where you are. For a moment, Mitzer wondered to herself if she had had a teacher like Vasily when she was in school. Would she have enjoyed mathematics more or less? And what was it about Vasily and Saskia? Did all real mathematicians love drawing pictures? It wasn't the way she conceived of mathematics, but maybe she'd had it pegged wrong. Concerned that Mitzer's attention was wandering, Vasily checked with his pupil. Are you with me? Sure, she assured him. Sure. So, time is creeping forward and you are rolling out along the tightrope. At the top of my little curve, you are almost as far along the tightrope as the second you that you saw when you started. But the fact that my curve now starts to gradually dip means you've started to go back in time. You're still rolling forward along the tightrope for a while, at least until the curve starts to go left again, but you're doing so as time goes backwards. And when you start rolling backwards along the tightrope, you're still moving backwards in time too, because my curve is now going left and down. Mitzer seemed to be taking it all in, so Vasily decided to test her to make sure. If I were me, standing in the centre of the tightrope, watching you, and remember, for me, time just moves forward, or in our picture's terms, up the page, would you be coming towards me or moving away from me at that point? I'm riding backwards along the tightrope, right? Mitzer asked. At this point, she no longer trusted her intuition. Yes, but time is also running backwards for you. You're coming down the curve to the second place where it crosses the x-axis. Is this a trick question? Backwards-backwards means, to you, it would look like forwards-forwards? Exactly. To me, it looks like you're riding towards me as I just move up the y-axis, though you'd be facing backwards from my perspective. Wait, where did the y-axis come into play? I'm on the y-axis. I'm just standing there in the middle of the tightrope the whole time, watching you. This last sentence, as soon as he'd uttered it, made Vasily feel a little uncomfortable. But Mitzer blazed past his self-conscious boyish blush. She understood what he was saying, and the thrill of that understanding was intoxicating. Vasily had told her before that this was the reason mathematicians did mathematics. It was like a drug. Still, she couldn't help but check that she'd followed along correctly. She pointed near the bottom of the curve, where it crossed the y-axis. Do we crash right there? Well, you do cycle right by, Vasily conceded. Maybe imagine I've dropped underneath the rope and I'm just holding on, and you roll on by. Mitzer reached out to Vasily's hand and stroked it, apologizing for her imagined blithe crushing of his digits. Don't worry, Vasily smiled, as much at his gallantly waving off her concern as enjoying the attention he was receiving. You're just an ant, remember? I'm sure it wouldn't have hurt. Mitzer kissed his fingers better all the same. She knew and understood the power of her tender touch. One last question. Vasily's awkwardness forced him to break the moment. From my perspective, from which direction did you roll over my fingers? Recognizing that there was more to his question than the obvious, Mitzer paused. And then she saw it. From the right, since time moves forwards or upwards on our graph. So I start on the right-hand side of you. That's super weird, though. Mitzer was now marveling to herself. I'm really moving backwards through time to the right, which, for you, is the same as forwards through time from the right. That's relativity, Vasily enthused. Your relative motion. Mitzer's mind was elsewhere. She wondered if Saskia had any inkling of how all of this might actually feel. And then she realised that Saskia's double, the woman who had turned her back at Cleo's, must have been an older Saskia, come from the future. She wondered, though, exactly how far in the future had that Saskia come back from? If Saskia this morning didn't recall having done so, then she was yet to go back. What Mitza didn't realise, and what Vasily's model didn't account for, was the possibility of life paths splitting and multiplying, or existing in parallel. But how one life path could split into two, and what that would mean for the person living the split, it wasn't surprising that that possibility had been glossed over. It would be difficult to imagine that as an option, that it would even be possible to survive such a split at all. That's it for chapter 23. Hope you enjoyed it, and I look forward to seeing you all next week. Cheerio.